that turn up at crime scenes along the border. Now gun sellers in Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Texas must tell the ATF when they sell several semi-automatic rifles to the same person in the course of 5 days. The ATF itself has been under fire from Republicans in Congress over a failed gun trafficking investigation known as Fast and Furious. But federal agents say they need stronger laws and more tools, such as the new reporting requirement, to help them build cases against kingpins. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
First Lady Michelle Obama, former President George W. Bush, and three former first ladies will be among the dignitaries at this afternoon's funeral in Palm Desert, California, for former First Lady Betty Ford. She died last Friday at the age of 93. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from MetLife Foundation, committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at MetLife.org.
Programs on WILL are made possible by Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you here and also happy to have back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she has been here for a long time, stopping by once a month to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. Trees, shrubs, flowers, ornamentals, stuff you can eat, houseplants.
Stuff you can't eat.
Stuff you can't eat.
Shouldn't eat.
And any and all of that, if things are not going well and you're needing some advice, maybe you have a problem, she can help. If you, you know, call in and tell us all about it. Could still be that you have a particular place in your yard where you want to put something, but you're not quite sure what, and you'd like to have a little advice, we can try and do that. Any and all of that, certainly welcome. All you have to do is give us a call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. You may also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu, if you would like to do that. And at any point here, you got questions, you can give us a call. Thank you very much for being here.
Good morning.
So we were just talking here about how it's like deja vu all over again. Mm-hmm. It's like last year in the spring and early part of the summer, we got good rain, and then the day just came, it stopped, and we're fearful that we're now into this, maybe another one of these periods where it could be hot and dry for who knows how long.
Yeah, we seem to get into this regular time.
Yeah.
Although 2 years ago, was it 2 years ago? We actually had a fairly moist August.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well,
well,
I guess we'll just
there's
see.
Hope. There's always hope. I guess that's it.
That's right. The important thing is that you need to pay attention to your plants, and particularly if there are things that have not been in the ground all that long, you might want to. Things like if you planted trees or you have other kinds of perennials, maybe you want to make sure that they get good water and just check and see how things look and give them water if they need it.
Yeah, I think – and I think sort of doing sort of the triage kind of method is kind of what I do. And it really – especially things – anything that's sort of that long term, like trees. Trees and shrubs, things that are much harder to replace than maybe – and I know some people really like that nice green lawn. But, lawn grass, for the most part, it can tolerate going dormant. That's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to go brown during the dry season and hot season. And for those cool season grasses, that's what they do. So you may just decide, well, I'm not going to water the lawn. I'm just going to worry about my trees and shrubs. And it is one of those things that even though maybe a tree's been in for maybe a year or so, it doesn't necessarily mean it's established. So I would say anything that's 3 years and less when it comes to trees and shrubs, I think about watering it. And even 5 years and less is something. We actually moved a Katsura tree 2 years ago. People may not be terribly familiar with that tree, but it looked fine last year. After its first year, it looked great. This year, I noticed it's starting to dry up, lose its leaves. So it was, even though it's been in the ground for a year or so now, it's suffering in this weather.
Okay.
So.
And probably, too, people need to keep in mind that you can't stand there with the hose for 2 minutes and think that you've done it. Really what you need to do is get a good, deep watering, and however you do that, we use a soaker hose, you use a sprinkler, you use something like that. You really want to get it well watered.
Right.
And then if you do that, say, once a week, that should be okay.
Right, right. And so we usually try to at least wet the top 8 inches of soil. That's usually our goal for that. And generally, we might say an inch of water a week is usually pretty good for most plants, unless it's something that's brand new, especially something that, say, a tree or shrub that maybe had been started in a pot. Those containerized soils are actually quite different in trees and shrubs, and so some of those actually dry out even faster than if it was actually balled and burlapped in its original soil. So you really kind of have to look twice at some of those and not take them for granted, I guess.
Okay. Well, we got some callers here ready to go. Let's start in. We'll talk first with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
This is the early bird. with a question about, and then obviously we're just talking about dry. I have an area that's always dry, even when it's, you know, Mother Nature is providing a reasonable amount of rain. It's under eaves.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it dry, it's shady.
Mm-hmm.
Got any suggestions of what I can put in there?
So you're thinking like perennials, or are you thinking shrubs?
Oh,
or thinking...
no, it's actually a narrow spot along the sidewalk next to a bit of the house. It's only about 4 feet long, and it's only probably about a foot wide. So
I'm thinking
something just to cover up the dirt.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, there are a number of, you know, there certainly are plants that will tolerate that, but usually that first year you plant them, you may have to do a little bit more watering than years afterwards. So, and this is full shade? It doesn't get any sun at all?
It gets a wee bit of sun.
A wee bit?
Yeah. The sun does kind of creep around there.
Yeah. If it was getting some sun, you know, some of the great ones for dry, hot areas, of course, are all the sedums. They may languish some or get kind of leggy if they're not getting – they'll probably survive, but they probably won't look quite as nice. So for the sunnier spots, you could certainly use any of the ground cover sedums. Those are great. Actually, for some of the drier type shady plants, things like – actually, I don't know if you know sweet woodruff.
Oh, well, that's what I put in.
Yeah. Oh, there you
good.
Go. There
okay.
you go.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it does pretty darn good in that those dry, shady spots. Even things like, I don't know if you're familiar with it. It has a horrible name, but a barren wart, which is another perennial. It's a little taller.
Right.
Epimedium. Those actually do quite well once they get started. There's also a perennial forget-me-not, which actually doesn't do too bad, the Brunera.
Yeah.
It's another one of those that needs a little care once you put it in, but then afterwards it does a pretty good job of sort of hanging in there on those.
Yeah, it's not far from a faucet, so I don't mind watering it in its early days.
Yeah, I think this first year,
well,
Mary,
yeah.
Once you get them established, you find a lot of things like that do okay. So it sounds like you're on the right track using sweet woodruff and some of those. And it's a nice little ground cover, and it'll kind of spread, and it'll be pretty happy. Even things like, I don't know if you're familiar with lamiums.
Yeah, that was a friend had suggested that.
Yeah, those are actually pretty darn tolerant also of those dry, shady spots. So,
it's not going to matter whether it's the Nancy or, you know, one that's variegated as opposed to one of the plain.
No, I just think the variegated ones are nice. There's White Nancy, there's Purple Dragon. And I like that kind of silvery, kind of green silvery variegation that's on the lamiums. Yeah. It's really kind of brightens up an area a little bit. So those would be at least some thoughts. So good luck. Sure.
All right, thank you.
And I am doing a rain dance besides.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
If we all do something.
Couldn't hurt. Thank you very much. Let's go to Champagne, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Speaking of trees, I have a 5-year-old maple, very happy, growing wonderfully and everything. But this year I noticed that there's a crack, and I don't know if it's sunburn or frost or whatever, but there's a crack in the trunk, and I would like to know what you'd recommend to do. Leave it alone, wrap it, paint it.
Well, I guess there's good news, bad news. Really, the best thing to do is to not do anything to it. So don't wrap it, don't paint it, don't do anything like that. And you certainly have hit upon, you know, unfortunately with maples, they have very thin bark when they're young. So they can be susceptible to things like frost cracks and sun scald and some of those things that can cause some damage early in a tree's life. But the good news is just a vertical crack that's not very wide but might be quite long, but if it's not very wide, trees do a pretty good job of sort of healing over those areas. They don't really heal it, but they heal over them. And so you'll find over time that will sort of close. And if you look at the side of it, of that crack, if it's been there for a while, it'll start to roll in.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's starting to roll in, then the tree's doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
I see.
So I would just wait on that. But your best bet is, of course, water it, which is what we've been talking about before. So just good maintenance. If you've got it mulched, that would be great. You know, 3 to 4 inches of wood chip mulch. Don't put it right next to the trunk. So mulch it, water it on a regular basis, and then the tree will do what it needs to do.
I see. And what I worry about is bugs and critters finding their way. So is there any point in trying any insecticide or just not bother?
I really wouldn't worry about that at this point. Generally, if an insect or something is going to be attracted to that area, it's because the tree is under a lot of stress, would make it more susceptible to those kind of problems. So your best bet, again, is back to this just good maintenance of trying to keep it watered, mulching, all those kind of good things, and really go from there and keep the tree healthy. And it'll do what it needs to do.
Okay, great. Thanks mm-hmm. very much.
All right, very good. And we'll go on. And the next caller is in Lafayette, line 4. Hello.
Hello. Why did you just say no mulch next to the trunk?
Well, actually, you can cause a rot problem. The trunk, the bark, the actual cells and stuff that make up the trunk are different than the cells that make up the roots. Roots are meant to be underground. Trunk is meant to be above ground. If you start mulching right next to the trunk, then now you've set up this situation where now the trunk is covered, that part of the trunk is covered, and it's an excellent place for all kinds of rots to come in. Oh. And you certainly can see trees. Well, actually, sometimes they'll just fall right over at that point, and they actually get a stem rot or trunk rot at that point or collar rot. So you always want to just keep it away and just don't no volcanoes right next to the trunks. But that's a good question.
I've had for years a question about how to discipline one's runaway ivy. it may or may not be vinca, but it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, especially in fall, you can't blow the leaves out. Mm-hmm. Can't rake them out. And yet I've seen some ivy on slopes which seemed pretty well cared for just by raking it parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Does this bring you any thought?
So you're just the concern is just having the leaves and stuff sort of pile up around them? And
yeah, to keep the ivy, which is tends to run riot,
mm-hmm.
To keep it looking presentable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is this on a slope where you have it right now, or is it just kind of?
Yeah, some of it is on a slope.
Right. And then the whole leaf blowing just never seems to work well for you? Or
everything stays tangled.
Everything kind of stays tangled. You know, you actually can't, I don't know if you can mow this area at all, but you could actually put your mower, I wouldn't do it now, but you could actually do it in the spring where you raise your mower up as high as it'll go and then actually mow over the tops of them. And actually that does a pretty good job. It sort of cuts off some of those stems and so you get some new growth and it really kind of helps to reinvigorate them. So I don't know if you're kind of at that point. If it's a planting that's been there for a long time, sometimes it needs that kind of invigoration to sort of get it going again.
So just mow it off.
I do that in the spring.
But, you can in spring.
Right. So you're really not trying to mow it really short, but you're just trying to sort of clean things up. And I would do it in the springtime when things are going to be actively growing. And so sometimes that's a good way. And then plus if you mow it a little bit, you can actually, if you needed to do a little bit more raking, it's a lot easier. You don't have those long strands.
Finally, I risk your wrath and David's.
Uh-oh.
If I mention that prohibited subject, Creeping Charlie.
Oh, no.
The whole lawn is sinking under it like a swamp. And I think I'm done with potions and poisons. It doesn't seem to have any effect.
Right.
Except maybe on the earthworms, which we want.
Right. So your thought is, what else can I do? Or I mean, the one thing about now, I have some in my yard too. You know, it's green. Right,
it's
now
green.
it's looking pretty darn green.
That's serious on a slope. It's green and I believe perennial.
Yes, it is. It's a little purple flower. So it does actually do a pretty darn good job of covering the ground. It's just when it gets into flower beds and stuff like that, it's when I have a real issue with it.
Well, it starts twining around the blade of the lawnmower.
Right. So it's really, really hard to sort of deal with it when it starts getting in with other plants. And I think that's probably one of the big issues. And actually, that's a good the whole idea of using herbicides and stuff this time of year is just, you know, when things are not actively growing and it's dry and it's hot and even the weeds aren't even really actively growing all that much, it's really hard to kill stuff with herbicides. So if people can sort of keep that in mind, if you're really trying to kill something, this, you know, especially with the weeds and stuff, this isn't necessarily the best time. So,
okay.
So, I don't know. I guess maybe it's time to live with it.
I may have to if I don't die with it.
You just walk quickly when you're in the yard so it doesn't take over.
Well, thanks and apologies to you and David.
Hey, no reason to apologize.
Problem.
Believe me, I have
it's a
plenty of it in my
it?
Yard, too.
And it's
I think,
a
you know,
hate relationship.
Sadly enough, it seems that it thrives under poor conditions. That's
it really
the,
does.
The problem. It doesn't mind shade.
Sure.
And that's the – in my yard, that's a big problem. There are a lot of places that are shady. So there are violets and there's Creeping Charlie and maybe tiny little bits of grass. But those are the things – they're just fine with growing in those places.
Right, right.
So there's not – you know, I mow it and I try to get on with life.
Yeah, well, you know, it is one of those things where you just get to the point where is this really worth it? This little effort here, is it really worth it? Let the Creeping Charlie do its thing. But I don't like it in my flower beds and when it gets into some of the other stuff,
that's
really hard.
If it's someplace where you can live with it, that's one thing. But if it's getting into other places where you don't want it, and there's not much you can do, but, you know, you go in there and try to yank it out.
Right.
And that's about it. And the other thing that you say, I think, is people need to remember about the herbicides, that which you know, you spray them on the plants, then the plant takes them up. But if the plant is not really growing, that take-up mechanism doesn't really work.
When it's hot like this, plants are kind of like us. They're kind of in just sort of hanging out mode. We're just going to sort of hang out and try and survive this and wait till it gets cooler and nicer.
Mm-hmm. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she is here. And we talk about lawn and garden care. And if you need some advice, things that grow in the home landscape, you got a problem or you need some suggestions, give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And if you'd like, you can also send us an email, and it's the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Other than just maintaining, I think probably we are at that time of the year where you're just going to want to make sure that things get watered. And other than that, probably we're sort of past the point where we're going to be planting very much, and it's just a holding pattern here, and maybe, you know, later on in the fall when it starts to get cooler, if you're thinking about planting perennials, you can do that. But right now, it's just trying to get things through the hottest part of the
probably the only thing that, you know, if you had something like bearded irises, this is one of the plants that we actually do divisions in July and August. So if you really wanted something to do and you're a glutton for punishment, then this would be the time you could go ahead and divide irises and that would be fine if you can. But the ground is so hard right now and I can't believe the size of the cracks in my yard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of an issue too. So
all right. Some callers here. Someone on a cell phone in Indiana. There, next, line one. Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just love Sandy Mason.
Oh, thanks.
I'm glad you mentioned bearded iris. I scrounged a bunch of starts from a neighbor who has quite a range of varieties, stuck them in the garden, and they've done very well. But I want to move them into a flower bed rather than just a holding tank.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what you suggest.
Yeah, actually, you can do that now. I know it seems kind of crazy, but you actually can do some. If you're just moving them, you might wait till it cools off a little bit. But if you're going to be doing any kind of dividing, this is actually the time to do it. And irises are amazingly tough. I'm truly – it is one of those plants that amazes me. I've had a bunch of extra starts and put them on top of my compost pile, and they started rooting into the top of the compost pile. So they're just amazingly tough plants. So you certainly could do that now or just wait until – if you're just moving them, you might want to wait until it cools off a little bit. But and then just go for it.
So you'd suggest digging up the whole clump that has grown from what I started last fall, and I presume chop the fronds off or – just leave them as they are.
Well, if you're just sort of lifting them up and moving them, I'd probably just leave the leaves on them. Usually, if we're dividing them, you do go ahead and cut them down to 6 to 8 inches because they tend to be a little top heavy, and so to sort of remove some of that, and they stand up better. And those rhizomes, just to sort of keep in mind that those rhizomes only bloom once. So if that rhizome has already bloomed, then generally that's the part that we remove. And usually you can tell by looking at them. It's usually a bigger, and you can often see sort of the remnants of the flowers. I don't know if any of yours flowered this year, but they may have been a little bit too little to flower, in which case I think I would just go ahead and just move them as is.
Well, yeah, some of them did bloom this year. I mean, it wasn't a spectacular display or anything, but one or two flower heads.
Yeah. So that's good. At least you kind of know what colors they are.
That
now,
was the idea.
So, yeah. So those rhizomes and that fan will only bloom once. So if you can see the remnant of the old flower stalk, then those would be the rhizomes that you just cut those off and then just put those in the compost pile. And then the ones that are coming off of that are the ones that are going to flower for next year.
All right. Thank you
okay.
very much.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Get at it.
Yeah,
all
go
right,
for
good
it.
Luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
We'll go on here to Urbana and line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about zucchini.
Uh-huh.
I've been growing zucchini in my garden for the last 3 years, and it isn't producing fruit. Like, my plant is huge, and I've got plenty of flowers, but no zucchini.
Okay. Can you actually tell if you've got, have you ever seen any, you know, they need to be pollinated. Have you seen
right.
any bees or anybody wandering around there looking...
Yeah.
Looking
I mean,
hungry?
And our tomatoes get pollinated, or I'm assuming tomatoes need pollinated. Our other ones do fine, and we've got marigolds around the garden to attract them.
Right. Tomatoes are a little bit different, though. They'll do their own thing.
Okay.
Whereas, yeah, things like squash and cucumbers and all those guys, they actually need to be cross-pollinated because they have male they have male flowers and female flowers. And you can tell the female flowers, they actually have kind of a swollen area right behind the flower.
Uh-huh.
So if you look, I would start looking at the flowers and make sure you have some female flowers out there. Because sometimes just over time, you often get a lot of male flowers first and then the females come later.
Okay.
So I would look and make sure you got female flowers out there. And as I said, there's kind of this swollen area right behind, like a little baby zucchini, right behind the flower itself.
Uh-huh.
And then what you could do, depending on how badly you want zucchini, is you actually could cross-pollinate them yourself. Find
okay.
the male... You just find the male flowers, the ones that don't have that swollen area, and they'll have pollen all over them on the inside. And then you could actually cross-pollinate them yourself if you're really dying to have zucchini.
Like with like a Q-tip or what?
I would just take the flower. As soon as it opens, you'd want to do this early in the morning. As soon as it opens, you sort of peel back the flower petals. And so
okay.
all you're seeing there is basically the pollen. And you'll see all this yellow stuff, so you know it's there's pollen on it. And you basically go around and act like a flower, act like a bee.
Okay,
and put the pollen on the female flower.
Okay.
The birds and the bees and the flowers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've seen bees around. I don't know if they just don't go in the flowers or...
Yeah, they should be if there's pollen.
I was doing wrong growing it.
If it's growing well, I don't think that's the issue. I think, as I said, sometimes the first flowers that come out are male flowers, and you just don't until you finally start getting, as the vine grows, then you start to get female flowers. Then you start getting the actual zucchini.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
All right, thank you. And we'll go on again. And the next caller here is in Terre Haute on the toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I love your show.
Thanks.
I've got a partial solution for you for Creeping Charlie, if you'd like to hear it.
Okay. Yeah. It doesn't require any nuclear arms or anything.
No,
does it?
No.
Okay,
I
good,
read
good.
This
okay.
in a 1960s text that I happened to read on lawn care. And they suggested using compost tea. And I tried it, and it doesn't exterminate it, but it'll suppress it. And this is the time of the year to do it. If you will repeatedly follow up with compost tea, it's easy to... I made a percolator out of a 55-gallon drum, and I compost a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it will very greatly suppress it. I don't know any way to exterminate it.
Huh. That seems counterintuitive to me because it seems like compost tea would have all those nutrients and water and stuff in it. You'd think it would love it.
It does, but if you coat the leaves good, if you coat the leaves good, it seems to make the leaves, I don't know if it's a disease problem or what. It does seem counterintuitive.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like
it. I tried it, and it sure seems to suppress it.
Well,
and it does a lot of the plants in the flower bed good.
Huh, but yet not with, I don't know, necessarily some kind of micronutrient or something that it just doesn't like. I don't know. That's an odd one.
Yeah, it is.
Something to try.
All right.
Thanks for sharing.
All right, well, thanks.
I never heard that before.
I guess that, and it can't hurt, and it will benefit, I would think that it would benefit anything that you would put it on.
Sure.
Because it would be like fertilizing, so I guess people can try it.
Yeah, as long as you don't, I think the one thing I will mention with compost tea is just make sure you don't use it around vegetables. You really want to be careful with that.
Okay.
Simply because of all the E. coli, all the other kinds of stuff.
Oh, because potentially a harmful...
Yes. When you're having compost tea and...
Microorganisms.
Yeah, you're basically making a tea out of compost, and if it's not completely composted, there might be some issues.
Okay. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. If you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, we can do houseplants too. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You could also send us an email if you want, and the address is will-talk. Illinois.edu. Just the other day, I happened to be out in my yard, and I have a pretty nice stand of Monarda bee balm,
Sure.
And the bees certainly like it.
Yeah.
But I just saw the most spectacular butterfly. It was liking it too. It was a black swallowtail butterfly.
Oh, nice.
Just really, really spectacular. And it was going around and was doing what the bees do. And so I'm thinking, well, that's really. And then I started thinking about, things that you could plant that would attract butterflies. Are there any, what are sort of like the leading things that you might suggest if you'd really like to see more butterflies in your yard?
Well, I think there's certainly in the nectar plants is just what you were talking about, Monardas. And actually they tend to like plants that have kind of almost like a landing pad. So a lot of the daisy type plants and stuff they really like. Certainly anything in the mint family, kind of along with Monarda and stuff, anything in the mint family they seem to really like. So any of those kind of nectaring kinds of plants are great. But the other part, of course, with butterflies is the fact we also have to think about the caterpillars. We can't have the butterflies without the caterpillars, and the caterpillars have to eat something. So it's kind of a lesson in, I think, it's one of those Zen kinds of things. Once you sort of get into butterfly gardening, is you have to be able to let a caterpillar eat something.
Oh, and they might want to eat something that you might actually...
Well, you have to watch them eat that. And a good example is a swallowtail, just what you were mentioning. They like to lay their eggs on things in the parsley kind of family. So they like things like dill and some of those types of plants. Then, so, if you plant enough dill, there's plenty for the caterpillars and plenty for you. So you kind of have to think through that a little bit. So, but it's not, it's so nice to have those butterflies out there that it's also nice to have those great plants that you can go ahead and put in your yard and let them. And another example, of course, is monarch. The caterpillars are actually on milkweed, which, we don't always think about milkweed being out there available to them. There's certainly the common milkweed that's a little bit more weedy than people might like, but they certainly will lay their eggs on that. But, anymore, a lot of people are, keeping their fence rows and stuff quite clean, and so even the common milkweed isn't as common as maybe it used to be. But there are also butterfly weed, which is a prairie plant that is milkweed, and they'll lay their eggs on that. I have a plant, actually, it has a horrible name. It's very pretty. It's called swamp milkweed. It's a little taller, has a pink flower to it. And despite its name, it actually does quite well in dry areas as well, and they'll lay their eggs on that. So, you kind of have to watch, let them feed, and enjoy the fact that the caterpillars are feeding, knowing that eventually you're going to get monarch butterflies. So, you're not convinced, are you?
Okay. Well, as far as dill is concerned, I think a little dill goes a long way.
Yeah,
so if I put in a patch of dill, there's plenty of that.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, so things like parsley and stuff. So you really kind of have to sort of think through that on how well that's going to work for you.
I've never been able to get parsley to grow because the rabbits eat it.
Oh, okay.
That's it grows just fine. But then they just come in and just mow it down. Yeah. Then one year I thought, well, like cilantro. It. They wouldn't like cilantro. No, they're into salsa, I guess, because they
it's
mowed
amazing,
that one down
isn't
too.
It?
Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway. All right, then. Sandy Mason is our guest.
It always goes back to rabbits, doesn't it? We always end up talking about rabbits.
Could be.
Okay.
All right. We will be back after a short break. This is Focus.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois. Donated blood saves the lives of the injured and critically ill. There are no substitutes for donated blood, and donation takes only 45 minutes. Blood donation. It's about life. More information is on the web at bloodservices.org.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the second hour of the program today, Brian Johnson will be here. He's professor of journalism at the University of Illinois, and every once in a while he's here. We talk about photography, so camera-related questions. Tomorrow morning, it is the morning of the month that we talk about food and nutrition, and usually Susan Kundrat is the guest. Well, she can't be with us this month, but Celeste Quinn will be talking with Linda Watson. She's a cook and a researcher. She is author of a book that's titled Wildly Affordable Organic, Eat Fabulous Food, Get Healthy, and Save the Planet, all on $5 a day or less. So that's tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, and then tomorrow morning at 11. I think we'll have some fun talking about the music of Bob Marley and also the guys that were really important to him early on in his career that were a part of the band known as the Wailers, Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and Bunny Wailer. And we'll be talking with Colin Grant. He's an historian and producer for the BBC. He's written a book about these men and their youth and how they got started. The Natural Mystics is the title of the book. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. You can look at the schedule and get an idea about what we'll be doing in the days ahead by going to our website. You can also listen to past programs there, will.illinois.edu. And again, this morning we're taking questions on lawn and garden care. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. So 333-9455 is the number for Champaign Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Another Indiana person here, line number one. Hello.
Yes, me again.
Hi.
A comment and a question.
Sure.
First, the comment. With regard to butterflies, Echinacea coneflowers are really great attractants.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
a nice one.
Goldfinches love the seed.
Yeah, that is a great plant. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, so. It's hardy and really durable.
Yeah, yeah.
The question is about compost tea. The guy said he had a 55-gallon barrel. Does that suggest to you that he's, you know, heating up compost in a barrel?
Well, there's any number of ways to make compost tea, but it sounds like he's doing it on a massive scale with his 55-gallon drum. And I've seen it any number of ways. Sometimes people just – I've just seen them use, you know, they just use muslin or some kind of cloth, and they actually put compost in it, and almost – they just steep it like you're making tea. And then there actually are you can spend money like anything. You can spend money. You know, you can actually have these aerated compost tea makers. And so you can do it on a little grander scale than that. So I'm not sure exactly what he's doing other than the fact that he's probably doing it on a larger scale than probably most people would.
You think it's necessary to, as you make tea, use it in hot water? It's just a matter of soaking compost in water.
I think it's just a matter of soaking compost in water. Now, there is some debate these days about the aeration, and that's why I think – but I think the debate is for those folks that are selling those aerators. I'm not sure I've seen that.
Okay.
I'm not sure I've seen the research that really backs that up necessarily, but that is part of it, is just steeping. Just like you're making tea. That's why they call it that. So.
All right.
Thank
okay.
you very
yeah.
much. Okay, thanks.
Great day.
Thank okay, you. Great. Thanks.
And for and again, if people want to find out more about how to do it, you can, and if you have internet access, just put into your browser compost tea and you're going to get a million hits.
I was going to say literally a million hits.
And there are many articles here about how to do it.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are people who will sell you some piece of equipment. But it also looks like it's not really, you don't have to have any special kind of equipment. Just the idea is that you're soaking your compost in water and that the water then is absorbing the nutrients and stuff. And it's just, then you use the water just to water stuff.
It's like a liquid fertilizer is kind of what it is. And it's been around for a very, very long time. And it's just – and there's lots of claims. I should say there's lots of claims now on, you know, that it does this and it does that. And I haven't really seen the research that really backs that up yet. So I would say buyer beware on that.
All right. And let's see. We'll go back to the phones and talk with someone in Champaign here. Line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, hi. I've got a couple questions about some of my flowers that usually bloom profusely are just not blooming this year, and that is my geraniums. I have these hardy geraniums, and I'm getting almost no flowers, well, none the past few weeks, and my dianthus are not doing real well either. And I am, but at the same time, I think it's the asters that usually don't bloom until later are doing very well. Do you have any idea why that is?
Well,
also, my clematis seems to have given up the ghost, or is it too late in the season to have any? As soon as I tied them up a bit with some other, you know, arches to climb on, they seem to have stopped blooming very much.
Well, you know, there certainly are some plants that just don't like this hot weather, no matter how much you water them. And dianthus is in that boat. They really, that kind of carnation group really doesn't like this hot weather necessarily. There are some of the new varieties seem to be a little bit better on that, but a lot of them just really don't like it. So I would wonder if it's really mainly that. I don't know if you've had a chance to water some of these plants, but at least to get them going. But I would imagine probably what you're going to find is once things cool off a little bit, you're going to start seeing some flowering on some of these things. And it's just because it's just so hot for some plants.
Oh, and the same goes for the geraniums?
Yeah, I wonder about that. When you say hardy geranium, are you talking about the perennial geranium or are you talking about – okay.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm a little surprised you're not seeing – they're getting plenty of sun, I assume.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so sun's not shade's not an issue for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why, because usually – have they been there in that same spot for a long time? Or
about 3 years.
Oh, then they should be flowering well for you at this point, I would think. So I'm not sure about that. I would certainly water them, and
can
you
I
may
fertilize?
Find – Yeah, I would not fertilize. Actually, I wouldn't fertilize anything. When it's this hot, I would not fertilize because they really can't take advantage of it anyway because it's just too hot. They're kind of shut down. So you're better off just to water them. If you've got a mulch, that's great. And just kind of do some regular maintenance stuff. But, it, you know, if they're looking good other than the fact they're just not flowering very well, I have a feeling it's probably the heat as much as anything.
Okay. So will they kind of make up for it when it cools down?
They should. They should.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll go again to someone, let me see here, in Aurora, line number four. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My question is in regards to, I was reading something in regards to pine trees, a spruce, I believe it was, where there's some type of fungus or something that's a problem here in Illinois now. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where the needles are turning brown or black and it's kind of like dying from the inside out?
Well, we've certainly have seen a number of issues with spruces, and there's a couple of diseases. Probably the one that we're seeing quite a bit of is one called Rhizosphera, which is a fungal disease, and we've actually seen it for a couple of years now, but I think it's really come in with a vengeance this particular year because it tends to infect when we have those kind of wetter springs, which we had certainly. And then what people will see is that second year growth tends to start to go almost a reddish brown, and then the needles will fall off. And then if this happens for several years in a row, then the branch dies. So that could be part of it. But I think the thing we have to kind of keep in mind is that this is actually one of those diseases that's what's called a stress disease. It comes in on plants that are already under stress. And spruces are really, they're not native here. They hate our hot summers. They hate the dry, especially dry, hot summers. They hate that. So, you know, we've had a couple of years here where spruces have not done particularly well. And so they're getting some of these stress type diseases. They certainly can get some other things. There's a spider mite, spruce spider mite that we've seen on these as well. So I think a lot of it in the bottom line is that for a lot of these, we can sort of look at stress issues that's sort of setting up this kind of disease cycle.
Well, is there anything we could do for them?
Well, certainly, you know, obviously, the one thing we've talked about before, if there's any way you can water them, that certainly helps. And probably the other thing would be good, some accurate diagnosis if this is really what it is. So I don't know. And I'm sorry, I missed where you're located.
Up in Aurora, Illinois.
Yeah, I would check. If you go to the University of Illinois Extension website, you can check and see where there's an office near you. And I would have somebody, you know, taking a sample and have somebody take a look at if this is a tree of yours. And they can give you a better idea if it truly is Rhizosphera. And then this would be a disease that we actually would need to use a fungicide. But it's too late for this year. You'd have to use it next year. And the whole idea, like with a lot of fungicides, they're really protectants for the most part. So you have to get them on before the disease actually infects those needles. So we have to do it next spring when the needles are first coming out. Usually when they're about half grown, there's a spray. And then once they're full grown, there's another fungicide spray. So it's too late for this year, but you could protect it for next year early in the spring.
Okay.
Yeah, it's tough. There's a lot of pines and spruces looking really bad right now. So.
Well, yes, because there's some in my neighborhood, not in my yard, but about the only way you're going to fix them, I think, is with a chainsaw. Unfortunately,
and you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, some of them have gone for so long, and this, you know, especially with something like Rhizosphera, it tends to be one of those things we kind of, you know, sometimes you just don't really notice it, and so maybe it goes on for a couple of years until the point where it's finally killing off branches. And as you say, sometimes there is that point where you just have to say, well, I need to move on.
Right. May I ask one more, a different question?
Sure.
I know that in the spring of the year is the best time to divide hostas,
mm-hmm.
but the last two springs have been so wet up here where I live that it's really, I mudded some in this spring, but mm-hmm. they're not looking too good.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I like about hostas, they're pretty hardy. You have to really try hard to kill them. But I was just wondering, is it possible to divide them in the fall without having a problem?
Well, you know, believe it or not, I mean, I used to always say in the spring when they're first coming up. But then talking to a few hosta growers, they're actually doing it like in the end of June and in July.
Really?
Which I really found kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose if you have access to plenty of water, that would be one of those that you might go ahead and try that as well if you really wanted to go ahead and move them. I like doing it in the spring when the leaves are not quite so big, and you know, it seems like they kind of rally well, but I would certainly not give up on it for either. Might be a little, unless you get plenty of water, I'm not sure I'd do it now, but certainly early fall, maybe if you did it like in the first of September or so.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. I don't know. One year I got some from a neighbor. They had a lot of hostas in their yard, big ones, and they were wanting to clear some out and divide some. And they said, do you want them? And I said, sure. And this was it was in the summer, and they were big and full grown.
Mm-hmm.
And I took them and I put them in the ground, and they did just fine.
They're truly amazing plants and pretty – you talk about low maintenance. I think pretty darn low maintenance once they get going. And you get some of those really big hostas. They take up a big space. If you're trying to cover a space in a shady spot, they'll really do a darn good job. So.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Back to the phones again and Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, it's me again. I had intended to mention also – that this year, for the first time ever, my irises have formed these huge pods mm-hmm. where the blooms were.
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed this morning that one of the stalks has three of the pods on it. And I didn't know if those were going to bloom again or what is that?
Mm-hmm. Those are probably the seed pods. They've actually gone ahead and formed seeds.
Oh, I thought they... grew by rhizome.
Well, they actually will. You know, sometimes they'll go ahead and the flowers will get pollinated enough that you will go ahead and get these seed pods.
Mm.
So you could actually let it ripen and start, you know, new varieties from seed. It takes a while before they finally flower, so you have to be somewhat patient on that. But I, at this point, I think I'd probably, unless you're truly wanting the seeds, I'd probably go ahead and cut them off rather than going from there. But that's their seed pods. They will do that periodically.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right, very good. Well, we have about 10 minutes, maybe a little bit less here in this part of Focus. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. And if you would like to send us an email, you certainly can do that as well. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Some event coming up that you might like to talk about?
Well, actually, you know, they talk about a barrel full of monkeys. How about a bus full of gardeners? How does that sound?
Sounds
what fun.
Just about as rowdy.
Well, we're actually, the Master Gardeners and myself are actually going out to Iowa. This is a trip we're doing in August. It's August 5th, 6th, and 7th. So 3 days, two nights with a bunch of gardeners.
I hope the authorities have been notified there in Iowa.
Anyway. So we're going out. The main thing that we're going to is Seed Savers Exchange. And I think we've talked about that periodically. It's in Decorah, Iowa. Mm-hmm. But they're really the foremost people when it comes to heirloom varieties, actually saving vegetable varieties, but also even fruits, even cattle. They have some cattle varieties that are actually not as common as they used to be. So it really is an amazing place. So we're going out to Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. But we're also, of course, a Wildberry Winery that's also in Decorah, Iowa. So we're going to hang out with there. And then we're also going to go to the National Mississippi River Museum in Dubuque, spend some time in the Dubuque Arboretum, spend some time in Galena. What a lot of fun. But the bottom line is people have to register today or the price goes up. So it's August 5th, 6th, and 7th. They can go to the U of I Extension website and just go to the Champaign County area, Champaign County site, and they can go. It's called Discovering Seeds, Rivers, and Wine. So, or they can just give me a call, 217-333-7672. And it's a great opportunity to sort of see some, you know, how heirlooms are protected. And it really is, it's quite a job. People, I'm not sure, realize, especially when we have things like zucchini and cucumbers and pumpkins that cross-pollinate. So in order to maintain that variety, whatever you're trying to maintain, you have to actually do a lot to make sure that they're not cross-pollinating. So they have to be grown in cages, you know, and they actually have to be pollinated individually, the flowers do, just to make sure that they have those particular seeds and that particular variety. So it's really is quite – but they have very nice – the Seed Savers Exchange has a very nice – they have a gift shop. They also have, of course, all their vegetable gardens and the cattle and actually Chuck Voigt, you know Chuck Voigt?
Yeah.
He actually supplied some horseradish varieties that are now in Decorah, Iowa, a wide variety of horseradish varieties.
Yeah.
So just to sort of maintain that, you know, we don't always talk about that as the fact that important of having that genetic diversity out there. When we start looking at some of the varieties that were available years ago, we just don't have those when it comes to vegetables. And so a lot of people are looking at those old varieties just so we have that genetic diversity and that we might need in the future.
Well, I know some people, you know, once you start out, maybe it's okay. You go down to the garden center and you have what they have.
Right.
But then you start getting, if you really get into it, you start and you realize that there have been enormous varieties of tomatoes and beans and, well, everything and potatoes and all kinds of different things that you just can't easily go out and buy, but have different characteristics, certainly different appearances, but also sometimes different flavor characteristics. And you just that's the only way to get something like that, because organizations like this have preserved them. And I know many, many years ago, I talked with someone from there, and they told stories about how, you know, there were some seeds in a drawer that had belonged to their great uncle of some variety of bean that wasn't available anymore. And they sent the seeds on, and they managed to keep them and to save them and also to propagate them and reproduce them so that then people can get those things and then have them and get them and then grow them in their gardens, which is, I think, is really cool.
Yeah. A lot of family heirloom kinds of stories. They didn't just bring, you know, the grandma's silver over with them when they came across. They also brought, you know, seeds. Seeds were very important to them because they had that particular variety, whatever it was. And I think the thing we find out more and more is that, you know, there are certain tomatoes that just do better here than they do, say, in Wisconsin or some of the other places where people might actually grow tomatoes. So just sort of looking at that and just making sure that that we have that kind of diversity out there. So it's a very interesting place to go, Seed Savers Exchange there in Decorah, Iowa, and people can certainly join us to do that. So,
and I'm sure otherwise, I'm sure they have a, they must have a website if you
yes, Seed Savers Exchange. And you certainly can order seeds. They actually have a catalog and stuff. You can order seeds from them. You can become a member. They have people that actually grow out seeds from them because they have to keep sort of resupplying and just make sure that the seeds are so good. So people actually go ahead and grow things for them and supply those seeds. And so it's really quite a kind of a complex kind of way to make sure that we have those kind of seeds that are available to us, as well as a lot of other plants and fruits and even cattle.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty interesting.
Go figure.
Well, it's been a while since I thought about them. I should go and at least look them up because when we talked, it was a long time ago. So they've been doing that probably like, I don't know, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, I don't know how long, but it has been a long time that they've really gotten into it. And it was just a matter of one of those things where they just had, I think Grandpa Ott, I think it was like her grandfather had these morning glory seeds and it kind of grew from there. So it is kind of funny. Some of the names are really quite odd. And I ran across one that I thought was really, and maybe this isn't all that politically correct, but there actually is a green bean called Lazy Housewife. Believe it or not, there is one that's called that, and it's called Lazy Housewife because it was the first one that was stringless. You didn't have to string it, so lazy. So you find those, I kind of like all those stories that go with it. Mortgage Lifter Tomato, there's one called that, and just Black Creme Tomato and where it's from. And, you know, it's just, I love that kind of historical perspective that comes with all these heirloom seeds.
All right. We have a caller here. We have a couple. We may or may not be able to get them in. We'll see what we can do. Belgium. Line four. Hello.
Hello. And Ms. Mason, how are you today?
Pretty good.
I've spoke to you before about the heritage peaches I have, which are Crawford peach, and they're not available in any kind of seed catalog or anything. And they don't travel very well, so you can't really, you know, you can't, they, so the companies don't want them.
Right. That's often the issue.
Yes, exactly. Are these people interested in those sort of things? Like,
I know they're doing apples, so I would certainly go to Seed Savers Exchange, and I think it's just seedsavers.org, I think is what the website is, but I'm sure you can find it, Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, and I'm pretty sure they're also doing fruits. So I would check into it and see if they might be interested in something like this.
I've had my great-grandfather had this variety.
Oh, that's great.
And I've had it all the way to now.
Wow.
And they do good some years, and they don't do good other years.
Especially
if there happens to be a warm period, then a cold, then warm.
Yeah.
Either the bugs or the blooms get killed and they don't pollinate.
Yeah. But it's great to have that. Yeah, I would definitely contact them, see if they're interested.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Very good. And we'll go over to another caller here. This is line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
When you
mentioned Decorah, Iowa, the first thing I thought about was the Eagles. Do you know about that? There was a website, and I became one of those geeks who watched it all the time. Where they had the eagle's nest.
Yes.
And you watched the babies grow up.
Yes, they had a camera on the eagle's nest. Yeah, that was actually very cool. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Try to do a little side trip and see where the nest is.
Yeah, really, no kidding.
It's located. The reason I called was I had a quick question about potato bugs.
Mm-hmm.
I've planted potatoes in the same relative area for the last couple of years, and first, I was getting tons, and now they're just eating my plants right down to the ground. And do you have any suggestions?
Wow. At this point, is there anything left?
Well, no, there are baby potatoes underground. No.
Anything left of the plants?
No. I'm still digging up baby potatoes, but I'm just thinking for the long term. Because what I've maybe falsely concluded is, bugs have decided that my garden is a lovely place to stay, and they just keep coming back.
Right. Well, you know,
they're also killing my eggplants because they also go after that.
I think.
But when they're there, I mean, I'm a vicious, you know, bug squasher, but I haven't used any product or anything on any of them, and I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions.
Well, there actually are. Of course, we're getting kind of later in the season. This would be something where late May, June would probably be the time to do this.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking long term.
Yeah, no, I know. I understand that. There actually is a BT product that is meant for the larva of cholera potato beetle.
Yeah.
And it's BT San Diego. And I'm not sure how you would find that. It would probably just say Colorado potato beetle spray or something like that. But if you look at the active ingredient, it's that Bacillus thuringiensis San Diego. And that's okay. One of the, you know, we like these BT products because they're very specific to that particular insect.
That's good.
And so we like those because there's certainly some other things that would kill them. But, you know, we have a lot of concern about that.
Right.
There's also another spray called Kaolin. And I don't know if you know that. It actually is a clay type spray. It makes the plants look really weird, but it's pretty good. It's being used on apples and a lot of other fruit crops. And it's another – and it basically just makes the leaves just unpalatable for them. So it's actually kaolin. It's with a K, K-A.
Kaolin.
Kaolin clay.
Know the name, right?
Yeah, so that's another one that's listed, and spinosad is another one that's listed.
I really have to jump in here. Okay. My apologies to the caller. We're at the end. Sandy, you're going to do a chat today?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Well, I think our plan is to do a live chat, so if you want to continue this online, go to our website, will.illinois.edu. Otherwise, Sandy will be back next month. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. Thanks.
Thank you.
Right now, we'll take our usual break so we can bring you an update on the markets. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Agricultural information on WILL is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's go right on out to the marketplace and get the latest on how commodities are trading in Kansas City. July wheat now trading 6.96¾, up 4¾. September 7.22, up 10¾. December 7.48¾, up 10½. July wheat at the board 6.38¾, up 2¾. September 6.46¼, up 7.